ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd canto, 2nd chapter, verses 1 to 15. Sri Shuka Uvacha, Iti Bhagavata Prishta, Kshatravartam Vyashayam, Prativaktum Nachotseha, Avkantya Smariteshvara, Sri Shukadeva Goswami said, when the great devotee Uddhava was asked by Vidura to speak on the messages of the dearest Lord Krishna, Uddhava was unable to answer immediately due to excessive anxiety at the remembrance of the Lord. So Vidura is in ecstasy, great happiness. He's free from all his obligations. He's free from palace politics. He's free from family encumbrances. And he's simply engaging in devotional service just to please Lord Krishna, traveling to different holy places, seeing the unlimited forms, Anantalinga, depending completely on the mercy of Krishna. So now he has got the fruit of all his pilgrimage. He has met Uddhava on the banks of the Jamuna River, and he's very anxious to hear about Lord Krishna. So therefore he's asking so many questions about Krishna, about his family. And now Uddhava is going to speak, but he can't speak right away. He simply heard the name Krishna, and he goes into ecstasy. So now we'll see how Uddhava is swept up in ecstatic emotions, and we'll see why he cannot immediately reply to Vidura. Verse 2, he was one who, even in his childhood, at the age of 5 years, was so absorbed in the service of Lord Krishna that when he was called by his mother for morning breakfast, he did not wish to have it. So, children, there's no question of not wanting to eat. They're always hungry. Any time of the day, they don't forget to eat. They don't forget. In fact, they'll tell you when it's time for breakfast, even before breakfast. So this is quite amazing that Uddhava was engaged in the service of the Lord. He was so absorbed in Krishna, he forgot to eat. His mother had to go and call him. Now it's time. Come and eat. So Srila Prabhupada was just like Uddhava. When he was a small boy, he used to stand in front of the deities of Radha Govinda near his house. He would stand for hours. At the age of 4, he would stand in front and simply look at the deities. And one time, later on, one reporter asked Srila Prabhupada when he was traveling, at what age did you attain God realization? Srila Prabhupada said, at the age of 4. So this is Srila Prabhupada. And if you have read the Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita, you will know that at the age of 5, he was ready to do Rath Yatra. At the age of 5, he wanted a Rath cart so badly, he told his father, please buy me a Rath cart. So they went to the carpenter. The carpenter charged so much money that they couldn't afford it. So he went away crying. But on the way home, they met one old Bengali lady. And she said, why are you crying? He says, I need one Rath cart for Rath Yatra. She said, oh, I have one old cart over here. Come and see. So they went to see their cart, and Prabhupada got it. And he made his own Rath Yatra. The first Rath Yatra was at the age of 5. And it was an 8-day festival. And he made all the ladies of the neighborhood make prasadam and distribute prasadam. And so Prabhupada, right at the beginning, he was showing what he was going to do in the future. He was going to establish so many deities of Radha Govinda and so many expansions of Radha Govinda, and he was going to do Rath Yatra, prasad distribution, everything. Kirtan, they had Harinam Kirtan also. So Prabhupada showed this right at a young age. So then the next verse, Uddhava thus served the Lord continually from childhood, and in his old age, that attitude of service never slackened. As soon as he was asked about the message of the Lord, he at once remembered all about him. So Prabhupada says in the purport, transcendental service to the Lord is not mundane. the service attitude of the devotee gradually increases and never becomes slackened. Generally, in old age, a person is allowed retirement from mundane service. But in the transcendental service of the Lord, there is no retirement at all. On the contrary, the service attitude increases more and more with the progress of age. So in America, the retirement age is 62. At the age of 62, you get all the, you know, all the money that you put in your whole life. And you can retire. So here Prabhupada says, the service attitude increases with the progress of age. Anybody here over 40? Who can? Yes. Why is that? Why does Prabhupada say that? Why does the service attitude increase with age? What does age have to do with it? Sankirtan?
You're asking why?
Yeah, why Prabhupada says... Yes.
And therefore more attachment, more ruchi.
More attachment, more realization. Because you've been doing service for so many years. Yes, Madhavan Puri.
And so you understand more and more the ludicrousness of material existence.
You understand the ludicrousness of material existence. What's ludicrous about material life?
Because whatever we try to enjoy will come to an end.
Yes. Yes, we've tried so many times, and by the time you're 40 and 50, you realize there's nothing in it. There's nothing in it. Time to prepare for your next life. So, the body deteriorates while you're in it, and you realize it's not there. It's not in the body. Enjoyment is elsewhere. Divyambari had something to say. Pushings of the senses are not so strong because they can't do anything, actually. They can't push. You, all you have to do is struggle for existence sometimes when you get sick, old age. So this is old age. But Prabhupada was not like that. Let's read some more of the purport. In the transcendental service, there is no satiation. Therefore, there is no retirement. Prabhupada started when he was 70. Way past the age of retirement, he started this movement. Materially, when a man becomes tired by rendering service in his physical body, he is allowed retirement. But in the transcendental service, there is no feeling of fatigue because it is spiritual service and not on the bodily plane. Service on the bodily plane dwindles as the body grows older, but the spirit is never old, and therefore on the spiritual plane, the service is never tiresome. Uddhava undoubtedly became old, but that does not mean his spirit became old. His service attitude matured on the transcendental plane. Therefore, as soon as he was questioned by Vidura about Lord Krishna, Jaya Maharaj, he at once remembered his Lord by reference to the context and forgot himself on the physical plane. That is a sign of pure devotional service to the Lord, as will be explained later on, Lakshanam, Bhakti Yoga, Siya, etc., in Lord Kapila's instructions to his mother, Devahuti. So how does, when you attain old age, why does the service become more fresh? Actually, there is a verse in the fourth canto, 30th chapter. Narayan is speaking to the Prachetas. And he says, always engaged in the activities of devotional service, devotees feel ever increasingly fresh and new in all their activities. You know why? What's this? I don't have Sanskrit, sorry. Next time. It's 4:30:20, if you want to look it up. 4:30:20. So why is it ever, how does it become ever increasingly fresh for the devotee? What makes it fresh? Sankirtan? No. Okay, you're just making fun. Anandamudivartanam. Yes, okay. The ocean increases.
New experiences.
Yes. Krishna is ever fresh. You're getting close, yeah. Okay. Closer we get to Krishna and experience our relationship, that makes it fresh. So here's what the verse says. The all-knower supersoul within the heart of the devotee makes everything increasingly fresh. Supersoul makes it fresh. And Prabhupada says, a devotee is inspired by supersoul within the heart to advance in devotional service in a variety of ways. The devotee does not feel hackneyed or stereotyped, nor does he feel he's in a stagnant position. So the best example of old age, great vigor in old age, of course, is Srila Prabhupada. When I was in Calcutta in 1973, we're on verse 3. Yeah, we're on verse 3 about how devotional service increases with old age, the service attitude. So I'm telling a little bit about how Prabhupada's service attitude increased with old age. Of course, he was doing so much, even the young people couldn't keep up with him. Like one time I went on a morning walk, and I was in my 20s, he was in his 70s, and I couldn't keep up with him. And I couldn't figure it out. I was thinking, how is he walking? How is he doing it? Can't figure it out. It's transcendental. But anyway, when I was in Calcutta in 1973, then I was a pujari, and I went to wake up the deities one morning. Prabhupada was there. And I noticed that the picture of Lord Nrisimhadev was gone from the altar. And I thought, oh my God, somebody stole the picture of Lord Nrisimhadev. What's happening here? And then we found out that Prabhupada was very, very sick that night. And he thought he wasn't going to make it. And so he had the picture of Lord Nrisimhadev removed and kept in his bedroom. He had blood dysentery, and he was up the whole night. And his secretary, Satsarup Maharaj, told us, can't blow the conch shell for Mangalarti, and then he led Mangalarti in a whisper. Couldn't hear, hardly. All of us were singing in a whisper, Mangalarti. And then 5 o'clock, Prabhupada asked, did you have Mangalarti? So actually we were successful in not disturbing Prabhupada that time. But then what happened after that, a huge telegram came from Shyamasundar in London. And Shyamasundar was glorifying all the preaching opportunities in London. And he said, we're having a huge Rath Yatra, first Rath Yatra in London. And we want you to come, Srila Prabhupada. And we're going to have a helicopter pick you up from the airport. 69? I don't know. The big one. This is the first big one. No, 73. It was 73. Yeah, in London, in 69, they were in John Lennon's house. They didn't have... 73, yeah. So then Prabhupada said, very many, many important people want to meet you, Srila Prabhupada, and we have made arrangements to instruct the Queen's oldest son, Prince Charles, in Krishna consciousness. So they had this huge telegram. Shyamasundar was always shooting the rhinoceros, Prabhupada told him, trying to do the impossible. So he sent such a telegram that Prabhupada, you know, couldn't refuse. But anyway, he was still exhausted from dysentery. He sat up in bed. He called all his GBC people into the room and said, okay, what should I do? So they had a meeting and they said, Prabhupada, we think best thing is if you go to Hawaii or to Los Angeles to recuperate from your illness. Prabhupada said, well, let me think about that. And then all of a sudden he said, no. He said, let me strike while the iron is hot. I will go to London. I will go for Rath Yatra. So Prabhupada went to Rath Yatra. And one devotee said, I saw Prabhupada coming in the temple. He looked very, very weak. I was amazed, but I could understand his strength was something spiritual. So then they took Prabhupada down to the Rath Yatra, to the carts. He looked at the Vyasa-san. He said, I'm just a devotee. I'm going to walk in the procession. I'm not going to ride. I'm going to walk with the other devotees. So Prabhupada started walking. And they were having an amazing kirtan, of course, with Prabhupada in the middle. And Prabhupada was dancing and dancing back and forth. And then sometimes he would stop and he'd look up at Lord Jagannath and say, Haribo! And then he would keep on dancing. And then he was dancing so fast that the Rath cart would have to, he would have to wait for the Rath cart to keep up with him. So then one devotee, Shyamasundar, came over to the devotee. What's his name? This is Sudarjaya. He said, listen, Prabhupada's not going to make it. He's very ill. I want you to follow him in a car. Be within 30 seconds to catch him. So we said, okay. But Prabhupada didn't care. He just kept dancing. He had his cane, but he was holding his cane up in the air and dancing with his cane. So then the people, the onlookers, they were just rooted to the spot. It was such an amazing sight, seeing such an old man leaping in the air. Now he started leaping after a while, jumping with his cane and dancing and turning around and doing all kinds of twirls. This is Srila Prabhupada, after his blood dysentery, of course. And now he didn't care. So then the policemen started getting worried. So they were looking for somebody official. So they went up to Srila Kirti. They said, "You have to tell your leader to sit down. He's causing havoc in the parade. You know, we can't control the crowd. The crowd is going wild. You have to make him sit down." So Srila Kirti didn't listen. So then again, the police came up to Srila Kirti. They said, "You must tell him to sit down." So then Srila Kirti went, he tapped Prabhupada on the shoulder. He said, "Prabhupada, the policemen are saying they want you to sit down. You are creating havoc in the parade." So Prabhupada just turned around and ignored him. He just kept on dancing. And the police, they wouldn't say anything to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada wouldn't stop, so therefore they couldn't do anything. So it kept on going. There was one devotee, Paravidha, he's still in London, I think, and he said, "I was distributing BTGs, and I was exhausted, and I was having a lot of trouble keeping up with the procession. But Prabhupada was just there dancing like a young boy." He said, "I was amazed at his spiritual energy." So then, Prabhupada was another, Rohini Nandan, he was leaping off the ground. The cart was stopped, just like in Chaitanya Charitamrita. With Lord Chaitanya, sometimes he would stop and the cart would catch up, sometimes the cart would stop and he would dance in front of the cart. So finally they arrived at Trafalgar Square and Prabhupada held his hands up, "Jai Jagannath." And so he danced the whole way. And that was just a day after he had this blood dysentery in Calcutta. So we just see that how Krishna consciousness, old age doesn't matter. You forget. I know, he flew from Calcutta to London. And then, yeah, so Prabhupada, of course, we know his schedule. He used to get up at 1:30, 2 in the morning and translate and chant. Yeah, I know, his servants, they used to say that we were exhausted. But Prabhupada, wherever he went, he would just pick up, he didn't care what time it was, he'd pick up his schedule at that time of the day. If it was 1 in the afternoon, time for lunch. If it was 11 in the morning, time for a massage. The servants were finished, but Prabhupada just kept going. The young servants, who were like, you know, teenage, some of them were very young, mostly in their early 20s. They couldn't keep up with Prabhupada. So Prabhupada, that's why he's called Acharya. He was teaching us by example. He must have been about 77, 78 years old when this took place, this Rath Yatra. And we have some older devotees here, Dadu and Sharanagati and Vibhu Chaitanya. You can just imagine them jumping and leaping in the air. And so this Prabhupada had spiritual energy. And so we'll go on to verse 4. For a moment, now we're back to Uddhava, he remained dead silent. His body did not move. He became absorbed in the nectar of remembering the Lord's lotus feet in devotional ecstasy. And he appeared to be going increasingly deeper into that ecstasy. So when the devotee, when he hears the name of Krishna, so many things happen. He remembers his relationship with Krishna. He remembers all the things he used to do with Krishna. He remembers his service for Krishna. So Uddhava was remembering like this. In Nectar of Devotion, chapter 36, there's a description of Uddhava in separation from Krishna. Krishna was in Indraprastha. He was away from Dwarka. And somebody told Krishna, "My dear Lord, Uddhava, he's just awaiting your order, standing at the entrance gate of Dwarka with tears in his eyes. He's just waiting for you to come back, waiting for your order." And in the enthusiasm of his servants, he's not even afraid of the devastating fire generated by Lord Shiva. Just simply surrender to your lotus feet. So this was the mood of Uddhava in separation from Krishna. Verse 5, it was so observed by Vidura that Uddhava had all the transcendental bodily changes due to total ecstasy, and he was trying to wipe away tears of separation from his eyes. Thus Vidura could understand that Uddhava had completely assimilated extensive love for the Lord. So from sentence 3, Prabhupada talks about different stages of development in devotional service. These are a little bit different from what we've been used to hearing. So Prabhupada says, there are three different stages of development in devotional service. The first stage is that of following the regulative principles prescribed in the codes of devotional service. The second stage is that of assimilation and realization of the steady condition of devotional service. And the last stage is that of ecstasy symptomized by transcendental bodily expression. So if we keep on reading, then we can see a little bit more how these correspond to the different stages from Shraddha to Prema. Prabhupada says, this is in the middle of the purport, the nine different modes of devotional service, such as hearing, chanting, and remembering, are the beginning of the process. By regular hearing of the glories and pastimes of the Lord, the impurities of the student's heart begin to be washed off. So that's what? That's Arnarta Nivritti. More one is cleansed of impurities, the more one becomes fixed in devotional service, or nishta. Gradually, the activities take the forms of steadiness, firm faith, taste, realization, and assimilation, one after the other. So it appears that after taste comes realization and assimilation. So that perhaps corresponds to asakti. And taste is ruchi, yeah. So he says firm faith, taste, realization, and assimilation. Asakti and bhava. These different stages of gradual development increase love of God to the highest stage. And in the highest stage, there are still more symptoms, such as affection, anger, and attachment. So that's prema. On the level of prema, you get these different stages. Gradually rising in exceptional cases to the mahabhava stage, which is generally not possible for the living entities. All of these were manifested by Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the personification of love of God. So again, Uddhava, here's a statement about Uddhava's symptoms of love. So we can imagine now, this is from Nectar Devotion, chapter 37. So this is describing what happens to Uddhava when he gets into ecstasy. So we can imagine Uddhava now in ecstasy speaking to Vidura. And this is what he looks like. When he saw Lord Krishna, of course this is in separation now, but this is when he saw Lord Krishna, his eyes filled with tears and created a river which flowed down toward the sea of Krishna to offer tribute, as a wife offers tribute to her husband. When this is in 37, chapter 37, Nectar of Devotion. When his body erupted with goose pimples, he appeared like the Kadamba flower. And when he began to offer prayers, he appeared completely distinct from all other devotees. So Uddhava now, in separation from Krishna, is also experiencing these ecstatic symptoms. So we'll read verse 6, more about Uddhava. The great devotee Uddhava soon came back from the abode of the Lord. So he was with Krishna, actually, when he was experiencing. He was with Krishna in Dwaraka. He came back from the abode of the Lord to the human plane, and wiping his eyes, he awakened his reminiscence of the past and spoke to Vidura in a pleasing mood. So I have another quote from Nectar Devotion, again, chapter 37. Of the ecstatic symptoms. When Uddhava was freed from all material contamination, he saw the Lord, and his throat became choked up, and he could not speak. By the movements of his eyebrows alone, he was embracing the Lord. Such ecstatic love has been divided by great scholars into two groups, addition and subtraction. So now he's experiencing subtraction. He's away from Krishna. If a devotee is not directly associated with the Lord, it is called subtraction. In this state of love, one is constantly fixed with his mind at the lotus feet of the Lord. The devotee in this state becomes very eager to learn of the transcendental qualities of the Lord. The most important business of such a devotee is attaining the association of the Lord. So I'd like to read a little bit of the purport. First, that's 37, chapter 37 of Nectar of Devotion. When Uddhava was fully absorbed in the transcendental ecstasy of love of God, he actually forgot all about the external world. The pure devotee, lives constantly in the abode of the Supreme Lord, even in the present body, which apparently belongs to this world. Pure devotee is not exactly in the bodily plane, since he is absorbed in the transcendental thought of the Supreme. So when we would, sometimes Prabhupada would give a class in our temple, we look at Srila Prabhupada, and he didn't appear to be exactly there. It was more like a projection, something very, very different. He looked quite different, actually. Not like anybody else. Like he was kind of projected there, but he was from another dimension somehow. We could just look at him for hours, but we still couldn't figure it out, how he was there. So I have the quote, actually. I think Sankirtan Das referred to this yesterday in class. In one of Prabhupada's first Bhagavad Gita classes, one woman asked Prabhupada about the Holy Dham. And Prabhupada replied, "Here I'm sitting now in New York, a very magnificent, the most wonderful city, the greatest city. But my heart is always hankering after that Vrindavan." He said. So the woman said, "Yes." Prabhupada said, "Yes, I'm not happy here." Prabhupada said, and the woman said, "Yes, I know." Very sweet. So Prabhupada said, "I shall be very happy to return to my Vrindavan, that sacred place." But then you ask, "Well, why are you here?" He says, "Because it is my duty. I have brought some message for you people." He said, "Because I am ordered by my superior, my spiritual master, that whatever you have learned, you should go to the Western countries and distribute this knowledge. So in spite of all my difficulties, all my inconveniences, I'm here because it is my duty." He says, "My personal convenience, if I stay in Vrindavan, that is my personal convenience. If I go and sit down in Vrindavan, I'll be very comfortable there. And I'll have no anxiety, nothing of the sort. But I've taken all this risk in old age because I'm duty-bound. I have to execute my duty in spite of all inconveniences." Well, that was Srila Prabhupada. He didn't care about his own comfort, obviously. So we think it's maybe uncomfortable in Vrindavan, but Prabhupada was very happy in Vrindavan. He loved Vrindavan. And when he came here in 1972, Gurudas asked Prabhupada, "Prabhupada, are the people here liberated, even if they don't have a bona fide spiritual master?" What did Prabhupada say, I think? Yes. He said yes, because Vrindavan is directly under Krishna's supervision. Krishna is their spiritual master. Said that. And Gurudas said, "I think it's better to have you as a spiritual master than to be born in Vrindavan." Prabhupada said, "Yes, that's a Vaishnava attitude." He says, "I remember wherever my Guru Maharaj went, Vrindavan was there also. Since the bona fide spiritual master carries the Vrindavan atmosphere with him, it's better to be with him." So Gurudas said, "Well, we're in the best situation because we have both you and Vrindavan." Gurudas said. Then Prabhupada said, "I'm simply Vrindavan's messenger. Vrindavan is revealed in the heart of the sincere devotee. In reality, it's not on any map, nor is it part of any country." So that is Vrindavan. That's the Vrindavan we have to find. The Vrindavan that will be revealed in our heart. So the Dham is actually in the heart of the pure devotee, as we're seeing now. Uddhava, it's in the heart of Uddhava. The Dham is there. Dwarka Dham. This one, which one? About Gurudas. That's from Hayagriva's book, Vrindavan Days. A lot of nice things in there. Yeah, Vrindavan Days. And the other one is from Prabhupada Lamrita. So here's another one. And this one I couldn't place. One time, Prabhupada was on a morning walk here in Vrindavan, and devotee asked Prabhupada, "What's the difference between Goloka and Gokula?" Vrindavan, very technical question. So what was, I said this before. What was Prabhupada's answer? "What's the difference? Goloka and Gokula. We hear sometimes difference between the two."
The difference is that in Gokula, the demons, Krishna actually kills the demons. But in Goloka, the demons appear to have, they've come. Buddha, they've come and then they've gone.
Uh-huh. And okay. That's the difference. Okay. Anybody else? Nishin? Goloka is only cows. Gokula too. Yeah. Anyway, Prabhupada said, actually there's no difference, but your consciousness is in America. That's what he said. No difference, but your consciousness is in America. That's what he said. Actually, it's a fact that wherever, according to our consciousness, we're living in the Dham. Some people may be out of Vrindavan, but they're always thinking of Vrindavan. And some people may be in Vrindavan, and they're always thinking of America. Like some people I know, like my son. He's thinking, when can I go to America? Anyway, so this is your consciousness. Depends where your consciousness is at. That's where you're living. That's where you're actually living. So here, we'll continue with the purport. When Uddhava wanted to speak to Vidura, he came down from the abode of the Lord, Dwarka, to the material plane of human beings. It's very interesting. Uddhava was not in this world at this point. He had to come down. Even though a pure devotee is present on this mortal planet, he is here in relation to the Lord for engagement and transcendental loving service and not for any material cause. A living entity can live either on the material plane or in the transcendental abode of the Lord in accordance with his existential condition. Conditional changes of the living entity are explained in Chaitanya Charitamrita in the instructions given to Sri Rupa Goswami by Lord Sri Chaitanya. The living entities all over the universe are enjoying the effects of the respective fruitive results of their own work, life after life. Out of them, out of all of them, some may be influenced by the association of pure devotees and thus get the chance to execute devotional service by attainment of taste. This taste is the seed of devotional service, and one who is fortunate enough to have received such a seed is advised to plant it in the core of his heart. So then Prabhupada describes the bhakti creeper, which goes up and takes shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan. And then at the end of the purport, Prabhupada says, that Uddhava attained this stage is evident from his dealings. The stage was that you grow your fruits of love of God and you're tasting the fruits. So Uddhava was like that. And you stay here and you water the plant while you're at the same time you're tasting the fruits of love of God. So this is the stage of Uddhava. So we can see how Krishna, he has appeared actually first in the heart of Uddhava. He has appeared in Uddhava's mind, in Uddhava's heart. And now, but we can't see Krishna. We can't see him in Uddhava's heart. But when Uddhava speaks, he will reveal his heart. And through his words, Lord Krishna and his Dham will manifest so we can see them. So the pure devotee, this is, he manifests the Dham. Through the words of the pure devotee, the Dham is manifested. When the devotee reveals his heart, then we can actually see the Dham. So this is what's going to happen. Uddhava is going to reveal his heart here. Verse 7, Sri Uddhava said, my dear Vidura, the sun of the world, Lord Krishna, has set, and our house has now been swallowed by the great snake of time. What can I say to you about our welfare? So Prabhupada in the purport, he says, the disappearance of the Krishna sun may be explained as follows, according to the commentary of Sri Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Vidura was struck with great sorrow when he got the hint of the annihilation of the great Yadu dynasty as well as of his own family, the Kuru dynasty. Uddhava could understand the grief of Vidura. Therefore, he first of all wanted to sympathize with him by saying, after the sunset, everyone is in darkness. And also now, we are in darkness, since Krishna has left the world. Since the entire world was merged in the darkness of grief, neither Vidura nor Uddhava nor anyone else could be happy. Uddhava was as much aggrieved as Vidura. There is nothing further to be said about their welfare. So let's skip down to the last paragraph because it's very, very poetic. Srila Prabhupada is being very poetic here at the end. As at sunset, and we can imagine now sunset, the snakes become powerful. Thieves are encouraged. Ghosts become active. The lotus becomes disfigured, and the Chakravaki laments. So, with the disappearance of Lord Krishna, the atheists feel enlivened, and the devotees become sorry. So this is what's happening right now. Krishna has left. And this is, so Vidura and Uddhava are one of the few people left. The whole Yadu dynasty is gone, the Kuru dynasty practically is gone, and now they're left over to lament the disappearance of Krishna. So, but, of course, yes. Krishna is Svatama Bhagate. Yes, we can be very happy because Krishna has come in the form of Srimad Bhagavatam. So now we are experiencing the appearance of Krishna here in Bhagavatam. And Krishna will actually appear before our eyes, pages of Bhagavatam. So we have actually, we are very fortunate. We have many, many sons of Krishna, the son of the Bhagavatam, the son of the holy name, and the son of course, the son of Srila Prabhupada also, he has left. When Prabhupada left, we felt the same darkness. We felt we were bewildered, confused. We didn't know what to do. We just kind of acted mechanically. We just went through the motions of our service when Prabhupada left. We didn't know actually what to do. But then after a while, we got it together and took shelter of his books and each other. So verse 8, this universe with all its planets is most unfortunate. And even more unfortunate are the members of the Yadu dynasty, because they could not identify Lord Hari as the personality of Godhead any more than the fish could identify the moon. So Uddhava's saying, everyone's unfortunate. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Shinjayitam Jagat Sarvam Govinda Virahename. So actually without Govinda, this universe is meaningless. It's empty. So why? Prabhupada explains in the purport that Uddhava is also lamenting his own misfortune. How is Uddhava unfortunate? Why would he feel unfortunate? He had association of Krishna from childhood. I mean, from childhood he was always meditating. Yeah. Yes?
Due to his excessive love for Krishna.
Yes, due to viraha.
And due to excessive love, he considers himself unfortunate.
Yes. What else? Yeah. No association. Yes. No association of Krishna. Another point Prabhupada makes in the purport. He's lamenting he could not properly use the opportunity to render devotional service to the Lord. So what does that mean? How... He was doing so much service to Krishna. So why is he thinking, I couldn't do service?
Well, he's very humble.
He's feeling humble. I have some comments actually by Burijan on this, which I kept from his lecture. He said, Burijan says, Uddhava could not serve the Lord to the extent of his love for the Lord. He wanted to serve so much more. He loved Krishna so much, but he couldn't serve that much. So he's lamenting. And another reason, Uddhava could not serve the Lord as nicely as the gopis of Vrindavan. These are Burijan's comments on this. Why is Uddhava lamenting? So then we have, of course, a beautiful analogy by Prabhupada. We won't read this purport because it's very long, but hopefully you read it, about the moon. What is the analogy of the moon? Actually, it's in the verse, is it? No. Yes, it's in the verse. The Yadu dynasty is compared to the fish, actually. And Krishna is compared to the moon here. How is that? Only Madhavendra Puri, yes. No problem.
A fish misunderstood, you understand another fish as another fish, but actually the moon is not another fish. Even though it may be illuminating to the fish, the moon is the moon.
Right.
But the fish was in the ocean of the milk.
Yeah, churning of the ocean of milk. This is the reference.
Yeah, it considers that other illuminating object as a fish.
So they thought, it's a nice big fish, maybe a little brighter than me, but it's just another fish. So people, when they saw the Yadus, when they saw Krishna, yes, he's maybe a little bit more. Of course, that's their love of Krishna also, that they didn't see him as so great. So again, I have another nice quote from Nectar of Devotion about Uddhava in verse 38, where he's also lamenting. One time Uddhava wrote a letter to Krishna. This is in chapter 38 of Nectar of Devotion. He said, "My dear Krishna, I've just finished the study of all kinds of philosophical books and Vedic verses about the goal of life So now I have a reputation for my studies. You know, Uddhava, he studied with Brihaspati. He was one, and Brihaspati, he's the guru of the demigods. So Uddhava had quite a reputation as a scholar. But still, in spite of my reputation, my knowledge is condemned. Because although enjoying the effulgence of Vedic knowledge, I could not appreciate the effulgence emanating from the nails of your toes. Therefore, the sooner my pride and Vedic knowledge are finished, the better it will be. So this is an example of indifference and ecstatic love for Krishna. Nectar of Devotion, chapter 38. This is Uddhava. So verse 9, the Yadus were all experienced devotees, learned and expert in psychic study. Over and above this, they were always with the Lord in all kinds of relaxations, and still they were only able to know Him as the One Supreme who dwells everywhere. What's the Sanskrit for this One Supreme who dwells everywhere? Sanskrit in this verse. What? In this verse. Bhuta avasam. Yes, Bhuta avasam. Bhuta avasam. Bhuta avasam. All pervading. So they had that realization of Krishna as Super Soul. Queen Kunti had this realization also. She said, Manye tvam kala mishanam anadi nidanam vibhum. So why? Why did they have this? Why did they think of Krishna like this? Why the Yadus? There's some logical reason for it, actually, that I figured out, or somehow or other. Why the Yadus saw Krishna as Super Soul, or the all-pervading one, all-pervasive one. Yeah. They were proud. Okay. Whoops. I don't know if it's in your danda fell at the same time. Doubly. Yes, Sankirtan. Yeah, that's also another reason, yes. Vasudev feature. Krishna appeared as Vasudev in Dwaraka. Yes, that's another reason. That was one reason I also thought of. I thought of another reason too. We'll hear of actually later in the fourth chapter, we'll hear more about it. There's another reason. Yes?
Oh, just like Krishna expected, when he would enter, he would leave his palaces, he was manifested as 16,108 Krishnas. Expanded everywhere.
Oh.
And then when he entered into the Sudharma assembly house, that all those expansions would become one.
Okay, because Krishna could expand himself.
So the analogy is given that just like the sun is manifested in every pot of water, although the sun is one.
Yeah.
So in the same way, although Krishna was manifested in each and every palace in Narada saw, yet still it is one Krishna.
Okay. I still have another reason. That's a good one, though. That's a good one. So the reason I had was, if you remember, Krishna ordered many of the demigods to take birth in the other dynasty. So these demigods, their relationship is more with Vishnu, Kshirakshai Vishnu. When they're in trouble, they go to the ocean of milk. So that's their relationship with the Lord. It's more like with Super Soul, actually. A lot of the others in their actual incarnations, in their previous incarnations, they were demigods. Yes, so they have a different relationship. They have that kind of relationship with the Lord. So naturally, again, they're going to keep that relationship when they appear in the other dynasty. So verse 10, under no circumstances can the words of persons bewildered by the illusory energy of the Lord deviate the intelligence of those who are completely surrendered souls. So, of course, first Uddhava was lamenting because the others didn't have full knowledge. Then he was lamenting because he had full knowledge, but he couldn't serve Krishna so nicely. But now he's saying, but actually, still, their intelligence is not bewildered. It's not that they were bewildered. This is the action of Yogamaya. So Prabhupada, in the paragraph 2 of the purport, Prabhupada says, the Yadavas were only partially cognizant of the Lord, but they were also glorious because they had the opportunity to associate with the Lord, who acted as the head of their family. And they also rendered the Lord intimate service. The Yadavas and other devotees of the Lord are different from those who wrongly calculated him to be an ordinary human personality. So we shouldn't think that the Yadus were in Maya because they saw him only as super soul. Even to have that realization is very wonderful, and to be with Krishna all the time and serving him, that's glorious. Glorious. So verse 11, Lord Shri Krishna, who manifested his eternal form before the vision of all on the earth, performed his disappearance by removing his form from the sight of those who are unable to see him as he is, due to not executing required penance. So again, I have another nice comment here by Burjan, that Krishna removed himself from those who could not see him implies those who could see him continued to see him. He just removed himself from the sight of those who could not see him. So it's not that the sun, when it goes away, it's finished when the sun sets. The sun is still there for those who actually can see. So another point Prabhupada makes in the purport is that this verse proves that Krishna left in his own body, not having a material body. So I won't read the purport, but hopefully you have read it and you can assimilate that point also. Verse 12. The Lord appeared in the mortal world by his internal potency, Yoga Maya. He came in his eternal form, which is just suitable for his pastimes. These pastimes were wonderful for everyone, even for those proud of their own opulences, including the Lord himself in his form as the Lord of Vaikuntha. Thus his Sri Krishna's transcendental body is the ornament of all ornaments. End of the purport. This is verse 12. We're at the end of the purport now. Prabhupada says, in the Vaikuntha lokas, the Lord is merciful toward the liberated or nitya mukta living entities. But in his pastimes in the mortal world, he is merciful even to the fallen souls who are nitya badha or conditioned forever. So Prabhupada, in the purport, he says, even actually, he's more merciful in the material world than he is in Vaikuntha. Why is that? Why is he more merciful when he comes here? Yes. He's what? Because we're more fallen. That's a good reason. We're more fallen, so that means he must be more merciful. They're all liberated, so it's natural. But we're so fallen. Yes. Sankirtan. He gives liberation even to the demons. Mahan Gopal. Yeah, he has to go out of his way to come here. He has nothing. There's nothing here for him. It's like he just has, you know, when the governor visits the prison, it's not for a pleasure outing so much. Of course, he's always happy. He's always happy in his himself. Yes, what? He wants to give some hope. Okay. He has greater desire to take us back than we do. Yes. What? When there is loss of religion, he comes to reestablish. Were you raising your hand, Charadeshna, or were you? Okay. Wasn't sure there. Okay. So these are, and Prabhupada says something else, which none of you covered. The six excellent opulences which he displayed in the mortal world by the agency of his internal potency, Yoga Maya, are rare even in the Vaikuntha lokas. So he showed his six special opulences here. He doesn't show them in Vaikuntha. Interesting. All his pastimes were manifested not by the material energy, but by his spiritual energy. The excellence of his Rasleela at Vrindavan and his householder life with 16,000 wives is wonderful even for Narayan in Vaikuntha, and certainly so for other living entities within this mortal world. His pastimes are wonderful, even for other incarnations of the Lord, such as Sri Ram, Nishinga, Varaha. His opulence was so super excellent His pastimes were adored even by the Lord of Vaikuntha, who is not different from Lord Krishna himself. What was the example that we, when Krishna was here, how the Lord of Vaikuntha was in great anxiety to see Mahavishnu? Yes. It's quite amazing because he gave trouble to a Brahmin. He was in so much anxiety and, you know, he worships the Brahmin, he takes the dust of their feet. And here, he took all the sons of that Brahmin. He was in, because he knew unless he did something drastic, Krishna wouldn't come. And then, of course, Arjuna, his devotee, made his vow that I will protect. So then he had to protect Arjuna. So therefore, he went to Mahavishnu. Mahavishnu got darshan of Lord Krishna and Arjuna. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, Lord Chaitanya explains to Sanatan Goswami, this is in Madhya 21. It's starting with verse 101. I won't read all the verses, but there you can look that up if you like. That Lord Krishna has many pastimes, of which his pastimes as a human being are the best. His form as a human being is the supreme transcendental form. In this form, he's a cowherd boy. He carries a flute. His youth is new. He's an expert dancer, just suitable for his pastimes as a human being. Just try to understand the form of Krishna. Even a fractional understanding of Krishna's beauty can merge all three worlds in the ocean of love. He attracts everyone in all the three worlds. So this is the teaching of Lord Chaitanya to Sanatana Goswami. And he says, the form of Krishna is so beautiful, it attracts even Krishna to taste his beauty. What was the example of this? When did Krishna, Maharaj, when he saw his reflection in a pool of water. In Dwaraka? Also in? On the marble floor, he saw his reflection. Picture nectar devotion. So this is his Vasudev feature was attracted, yes. When Krishna wakes up in the morning, first thing he does is meditate on himself. So he's attracted to his form of Shyam Sundar. Even his other forms are attracted. So we can just imagine, this is a verse in Bhagavatam that says that it's wonderful even for the Lord himself, the Lord of Vaikuntha, the pastimes of Krishna are wonderful. So then and it says here also, Bhushana Bhushanangam, his transcendental body, is the ornament of all ornaments. So Lord Chaitanya says, ornaments caress his body, but the transcendental body of Krishna is so beautiful, it beautifies the ornaments he wears. Therefore, Krishna's body is said to be the ornament of all ornaments. So, Lord Chaitanya says, the beauty of Krishna's body is so attractive, attracts not only the demigods, other living entities, also even the Narayans, even Lakshmi, who is the most chaste, she is attracted to Krishna. The wife of Narayan. She doesn't go to anyone else, but when she sees Krishna, that's it. She wants to leave her husband and go to Krishna. Of course, Narayan and Krishna are the same, so she's not really unchaste. But still, this is Krishna. So what else can we say about Krishna? Krishna's beauty. Maharaj, give us a verse.
Well, it's a familiar story that we've taken to church.
Story, okay.
When when Mahaprabhu was doing his Chaturmasya in Sri Lanka, when he's accepting Venkatpata.
Oh.
Your Lakshmi is attached to Narayan, but then how does she perform austerities to achieve Krishna's chest?
Right. How come Lakshmi performs austerities to achieve Krishna? This is Lord Chaitanya speaking to Venkata Bhat. Chaitanya Charitamrita. They were joking with each other.
They were joking.
That's what you do during prasad if you're with Lord Chaitanya and Nityananda.
He was speechless. Venkata became speechless. I cannot answer that.
Right. So he was stumped. Anything else about how is Krishna so beautiful? What is beautiful about Krishna? Yes. He reflects Radharani's beauty and the gopis. When When they're happy, Krishna becomes more beautiful. And when Krishna becomes happy, then they become more beautiful. And there's a competition. Yes?
Best woman of the world, the crab.
What's that?
Best women of the world.
The best women are the gopis, are the best women, and they're attracted to Krishna. So that's why Krishna is the most beautiful. How? Yes, Sankirtan. Oh, Bhagavad Gita. Yes. Yes. Anything you see in this world that's slightly beautiful, it's Krishna. Pachi? Cupids. Kandarpa Koti.
But when Cupid came to in order to display the movies of dancing in Las Vegas, it was a nice environment, so he was thinking, okay, let me do it. He became ashamed.
He gave up his bow in frustration. Yes. Cupid came to the Rasalila to try to get some customers, try to make somebody, try to get the gopis or get Krishna, but he had to give up his bow in frustration because Krishna was more beautiful. Yes?
It's like actually it's also saying, in India, they used to say, Suraj ko deepak dekhana. It means like, you know, to offer the
yes.
deepak to the sun.
It's yes.
Like the same thing like, you know,
yes. So if you just imagine you have a little deepa, like in Diwali, not Diwali, Kartik, a little lamp, and you're offering it to the sun. So what is that compared to the sun? So this is Cupid in front of Krishna. Nishin, one more. Yeah. He's the most beautiful. Radharani is attracted, and she's the most beautiful. Maharaj.
Another one was the example when Brahmaji was executing his potency to try to bewilder by stealing the coward voice. Then it was described that in order to understand the significance of his power, he had to remove his own power. By removing his own potency, he became Brahma, became bewildered by his own sin. These are the same coward boys that I locked up before.
Yeah.
They're in the cave. I thought they were under the... They were under the Oh, then who are these other boys in camps that are in front of me? Brahma became bewildered by his own power.
Right.
He realized that my mystic power is nothing. It's like in front of the sun it is nothing. I have to remove my own potency.
Yeah, so Brahma had that realization when he tried to compete with Krishna, that he was bewildered by his own power. He became bewildered.
Even in the case of Shishina
Narayan Rishi.
He came with his girls to Lupin.
Yes.
And he emanated from their two bodies. They emanated so gorgeous ladies. The girls of Lupin were ashamed.
Yes. So the power. Yes. Narayana Rishi. When Cupid came to try and disturb him, then he just created so many beautiful girls from himself.
He was actually afraid. Cupid was afraid that he was going to be cursed.
Yeah, he was afraid.
I know you've been sent by Indra. Now you can take any of these girls that are manifested.
Yeah. And he took Urvashi, right? Took Urvashi. Yes. Yeah. Shiva. You know Shiva.
Yeah.
He cannot tolerate. Yes. Remember how they tested the three. Anyway, remember when Bhrigu went to test the three of them. So Shiva's reaction was. He was ready to kill Bhrigu. And so similarly, Cupid, he's ready. You know, he's the mode of ignorance, his anger. You know, he's just keeping it down, you know, until the devastation. But he, you know, it's there. He's keeping it under control right now. He's meditating on Sankarshan. Because we'll hear about that later. That Brahma said, you know, please, wait. Don't do it while we're trying to create. So, but sometimes he loses. Sometimes he does. He loses it. And Cupid got the force of his anger. Okay, anything else about Krishna's amazing beauty and opulence? We'll go on. We have a few more verses here. Verse 14. The damsels of Raja, after pastimes of laughter, humor, and exchanges of glances, were anguished when Krishna left them. They used to follow him with their eyes. Thus they sat down with stunned intelligence and could not finish their household duties. So Krishna left Vrindavan, and when Krishna left, and this was the state of the gopis, at the end of the purport, though, Prabhupada says something different. It is said in the revealed scriptures that Lord Krishna personally never goes beyond the boundary of Vrindavan. He remains there eternally because of the transcendental love of the inhabitants. Thus, even though he is not visible at present, he is not away from Vrindavan for a moment. He's here. He's not away for a moment. So how is that? Krishna never leaves Vrindavan. He's here. What does that mean? Sankirtan? Vrindavan and Krishna are not different. Okay. Maharaj? In his bhava expansion.
When he went to Mathura, that was,
yes.
There was Vasudev born, but he remained in Vrindavan in his bhava expansion.
Bhava expansion. Maharaj Puri? Aprakrat. Aprakrat bhava expansion. Yes. That's good. Vrindavan is Radharani, so Krishna never leaves. It's under the control of Radharani also. So how can Krishna leave Vrindavan? Adi Purusha. He's captured in the hearts of his devotees.
Oh, example of that is
Bilwa Mangal Thakur.
Yeah, when he was singing for Krishna, there was a cowherd boy that was coming to hear.
Yes.
And then afterwards, then as he was thinking, who is this boy? Then because this boy is all pervasive, he could understand that he's being discovered. So he says, I have to go now, my mother is calling.
Yes.
And he reached up to grab him. And Prabhu Mangala reached out to grab him, and the boy slipped away from him. He said, I'll be very impressed when you may slip out of my hand, but I'll be very impressed when you can leave the chambers of my heart.
Yes. You have left my hand, but you cannot. I'll be impressed if you can leave my heart.
There's another thing here.
Yes?
The purport about the.
In 14.
Yeah, in 14. Although the gopis were seemingly anguished by the Lord.
That's teasing behavior.
When Lord Krishna would leave them, they could not tolerate the separation and used to follow their eyes and minds.
Right.
There's two things. One, I asked one Vrajavasi. I said, why is Krishna called Kanu?
Kanu.
And he became very happy. He said, finally I can speak to the Krishna Gita. I said. And he says, Kanu means overflowing with happiness. And is a ending that... A suffix that means pain.
Hmm.
He says that by his joking and teasing behavior, he gives the Vrajavasis pain, but because he's overflowing with happiness, we cannot leave him. Then he's known as Kanu.
Kanu. Oh, that's right.
The other one was from Padyavali. Vilokya Krishnam Vrajavam Netram Sarvendrayanam Nayanatvam Eva Akarnya Tadu Venu Nanati Pangyam. I chant from his chantra, not from Eva. He said the gopis could see Krishna from the corners of their eyes. Then they wished that all of their senses became eyes. And then again, when they were attracted by the crooked sound of the flute, again they wished that all their senses became ears.
Okay, so this is the state of the gopis when Krishna leaves, or when Krishna's there even. Either way, yes, Govardhan. Yes, he's in the form of Govardhan. So he's always present. He doesn't leave Vrindavan because he's Govardhan. Yes, Madan Gopal. Yes. That's what Prabhupada said at the end of the purport. He's here. We don't have the eyes to see him. He's here, actually.
Did he say something that don't try to see Krishna through sound? He said not in some bush in Vrindavan.
Yeah, that's in some other purport, yeah.
Something like that.
He said, try to see Krishna in devotional service, or the order of the spiritual master. Not in the bush in Vrindavan. You know that one?
No, I was thinking of that one.
Yeah. What's yours?
Srila Bhakti Sinatra said, don't act in a way that you want to see Krishna. Act in such a way that Krishna wants to see you.
Yes. Don't try to see Krishna, but act in such a way that Krishna will want to see you. So this is, in Nectar of Devotion, one of the qualities of pure devotional service. That it attracts even Krishna. So this, we're trying to attract Krishna by speaking, by hearing, chanting Bhagavatam, We're trying to attract the attention of Krishna. By chanting also, we're trying to attract the attention of Krishna. So this is the meaning of this verse. Krishna never leaves Vrindavan. Another meaning, I think we discussed this, but Prabhupada said that Krishna can be present, is present more acutely in separation. He's much more present when you're feeling separation from him. And that is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teaching.
See this line right here.
Okay.
This line here, that the gopis were so stuck by the situation they couldn't finish their household duties.
Right.
In Bhaktir Samrita 3, 48, 49, and 50 is describing about Ujjava, one of Krishna's pre-Anandasakas. And in the middle shloka, Radharani says, I would like to be devoted to my husband and to my domestic duties, my household duties. But then here comes Ujjvala, canvassing on Krishna's behalf. Under the circumstances, it's very, very difficult for a girl to resist her natural attraction to Krishna.
Okay. So they can't live in this. It's just like we heard about Uddhava. He's somewhere else. He's not in this world. So the gopis, they were somewhere else. Their bodies were here, but their minds... It says their minds and everything else, they were somewhere else with Krishna. So the last verse for today, verse 15. Personality of Godhead. The all-compassionate controller of both the spiritual and material creations is unborn. But when there is friction between his peaceful devotees and persons who are in the material modes of nature, he takes birth just like fire, accompanied by the Mahat Tattva. There's a verse in the first canto we read last year, in the 13th chapter. This is verse 49. That Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Shri Krishna, in the guise of all-devouring time, Kala Rupa, has now descended on earth to eliminate the envious from the world. So you have, just like if you're trying to ignite fire, they used to use two pieces of wood. And they would rub the two pieces of wood and fire would come. So here we have the demons and we have the devotees. And they rub together and Krishna comes. This is the analogy. The verses are very beautiful. Beautiful analogies here.
What was that one?
That's the verse. Oh, that one was 1.13.49. That Krishna has come in the form of time to eliminate the envious. So Prabhupada said that actually for the Pandavas and for the devotees... They may call him, he's Kala in disguise, but he's not at all dangerous. Kala is very dangerous, actually. We saw in Bhagavad Gita, the manifestation of Kala, I am come here to destroy everyone except for you. So for the devotees, Prabhupada says, Krishna's real form is manifested, beauty, six opulences. But for the non-devotees, his form of Kala Rupa is there. So then Prabhupada says that this form of Kala Rupa, this is not at all pleasing for the non-devotees. So therefore, they prefer to think of the form of the Lord as non-existent, formless. They want to think of Krishna as formless so that they won't be killed by Krishna. This is the purport of 1.13.49. Yes. That they prefer to think of the form of the Lord as formless, so then they won't be killed by Kala Rupa. So Krishna comes, when he appears differently to different people. For the demons, Krishna comes in the form of death. And for the devotees, death comes in the form of Krishna. So it's quite different how they see things. So then last paragraph. Again, Prabhupada is being very poetic at the end of this purport. So let's read the last paragraph. Lord Krishna appeared just like electricity when there is friction between Kamsa and Vasudeva and Ugrasena. Vasudeva and Ugrasena were the Lord's devotees, and Kamsa, a representative of the Karmis and Gyanis, was a non-devotee. Krishna, as he is compared to the sun. He first appeared from the ocean of the womb of Devaki, and gradually he satisfied the inhabitants of the places surrounding Mathura, just as the sun enlivens the lotus flower in the morning. After gradually rising to the meridian of Dwaraka, the Lord set like the sun, placing everything in darkness, as described by Uddhava. The beautiful poetic purport by Srila Prabhupada.
You just mentioned about this thing about that for the demons, the Supreme Lord is manifested as death.
Yeah.
For the
No, death is manifested as Krishna. That's just something. That's not from anywhere. That's just a realization. Anyway, sometimes it happens. After reading the books for years, sometimes you get a realization. Yeah. Anyway, no. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Mrityu Savaharaschaham. And then Prabhupada, the analogy is there of the cat and the kitten. So that's the analogy that for the, when the kitten and the mouse carried in the mouth of the cat. So this is that, actually. For the rat, yes, for the rat, if he's held in the mouth of the cat, he's devastated. I'm going to die. He's in great fear. So this is the demon in the jaws of death. But the devotee, held in the jaws of the cat, is feeling, no, I'm in Krishna's hands. I'm going to Krishna. This is very nice.
Like the kitten in the
mouth of the cat. Yeah. It's like the kitten. This is my mother. This is my father. This is my mother holding me. So this is how death is perceived differently. Actually, it's a fact. That they may say, oh, you're also dying. We're also dying. You're also dying. But it's not the same. It's not the same. Experience is different. We've seen many devotees pass away in Vrindavan, and the experience is quite different. Okay, anything else? Madhavendrapuri.
Yeah, in 15 it says, the Lord took birth just like fire, accompanied by the Mahasadhana.
Yeah.
And in Rupa it's mentioned that it comes accompanied by his unctions.
Yes, his plenary portions.
And think of one cross reference.
Uh-huh.
Once you won, it says, Jagrihe Purusham Nishu.
Mm-hmm.
I accept
the form.
Mm-hmm. So this is to prove that he accepts, meaning that's not him.
Yes, yes.
Krishna's to Bhagavan
Swayam. Yes.
Krishna accepts the form of Purush mm-hmm. to manifest in Mahatma.
Right.
But himself is beyond.
He is beyond.
Jagrihe Purusham Nishu, he accepts.
Yes. So Krishna himself is beyond, but he accepts the form. That is 1-3-1. Also, another way of looking at it is that when Krishna comes, then all of his anshas come with him. They join in the form of Krishna. Lord Chaitanya, same thing. Krishna, same thing. So all of the Purusha came when Krishna came also. And they performed different functions when it was necessary. Okay, any other questions or comments on these verses today? Yes, Stephen Barr. About the Yadus. Okay, research on the Yadus. Okay, the ladies of Hastinapur glorify the fortune of the Yadus. Yes. Yeah. They thought they were very fortunate. Of course, see, Uddhava was with the Uddhava was a Yadu. He was with the Yadus, so he's thinking, oh, We're most unfortunate, just like in Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Oh, they have the mercy. So the ladies of Hastinapur would say, oh, they have the mercy, you know. they are with Krishna, you know, they've got the mercy. It's the mood of the devotees. Yeah. Yes, fully awake at their service to Krishna. So Uddhava is experiencing some mood here in separation from Krishna also. That, oh, they just had this realization. But actually they were fully awake in their service to Krishna. So that appears to be contradictory. But I guess we have to just see from the different moods of the devotees. When the devotees are in, now he's in the mood of separation. So he's just thinking, oh, we're so unfortunate. Oh, we don't have this realization. Yes, thank you, Tanas. Yes. Yes, they're very fortunate. Right. And so they're very, very fortunate. They got to see the form of Krishna. Even the demigods, they have to wait. Yes. You know the story. They had to wait in the doorkeeper was saying, please don't recite your prayers, Brahma. Please be quiet while you're waiting, Indra. You know, they were waiting to see Krishna in Dwaraka. Yes. He can't see. No, they rarely see. They pray for him to come. And then they can see he comes in some yajna or he comes somehow like that, but very difficult. Yeah?
Brahmaji, when he was flying in the swan carrier, he was astonished at seeing Krishna and the coward boys were sitting down and eating lunch on the bank of the Jamuna, and he was astonished that he comes for us only in yajna, and here he is. He manifests himself in the form of the yajna fire, and here he is sitting with his friends and eating.
Yeah, so the demigods, you know, they yearn for this darshan of Krishna. Read in Nectar Devotion, I don't have the exact quote, how they were all sitting in the waiting room waiting for darshan. And the doorkeeper was telling them, darshan
means ardent, urgent.
Lalyam, lalasa. Nectar of Devotion, I don't remember exactly. I don't have it here, but there is some place where all the demigods are waiting in anxiety to see Krishna, and the doorkeeper is chastising them. He's saying, "No, please, don't chant your prayer so loudly."
Even the Chokidar in Krishna's palace is bigger than the demigods.
Yeah, he's keeping them in line. Yes. Yes.
Demigods in their place.
How do you understand that?
Well, it could be the mood. It could be also that, you know, they were, that was their that was the incarnations of the demigods. They were seeing a super soul, actually. They had that realization. But that's a question for research also. Is he actually only the super soul for them, or is he something more for the others?
The mood is shown in text 9.
Yeah.
In the Viraha or in the meditation.
Shiragavdishina Tray is quite clear in the Viraha. He said there was some pride.
There was some pride.
But in the first time, it says very clearly, they could see, the demigods could not see.
Yeah. Yeah, so Prabhupada says in the purport that actually they were fortunate. They weren't unfortunate. That they had the association of Krishna. He says in the next verse purport, which I read actually. The Prabhupada says they were. Yeah. Yeah. So he's one of the Yadus. Uddhava is one of, so he's speaking for them also. That we are so unfortunate. We only got the Vasudeva feature. You know. But the gopis, they got the real beautiful Krishna. Of course he was sent to Vrindavan. Yeah, I don't know about that. Yes, Madhavendra Puri.
It says that Uddhava is the cousin of Lord Krishna. What
yes. Relationship with Uddhava. You know that, Maharaj? He's a cousin of Krishna. Who's Uddhava's father and mother and all that? Another question for research. You have it? The son of Vasudeva's sister. Okay. That's what she's saying here. One of Vasudeva's sisters.
He was the son of Deva Bhaga.
Deva Bhaga.
Where does that say?
Yeah, that was in this chapter. Or last. Yeah, I think that we read that actually in one of these verses. Son of, let's see, when in chapter 1. When he first. Deva Bhaga. Uddhava was the son of the sister of Vasudeva. Okay? And that way he's a cousin of Krishna. Sister of Vasudeva. We'll try and find the reference, okay?
Uddhava considered himself to be a Yadu.
Yeah.
Right? And so Vasudeva was a Yadu.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Vasudeva's Yadu dynasty. Preaching application verse. Okay, that is verse, which verse? 10. Good for preaching application. Devotees are unaffected by the words of the atheists. This is in the purport, yeah? Also in the verse. Yeah.
Dogs may bark, but the caravan goes on.
Yes. Dogs may bark, but the caravan goes on. Okay, any other comments or questions on this? Okay, all glories to Shiva.